The situation is dire. 9 out of 10 previous Mortal Kombat tournaments have been won by other podcasts. Better podcasts with more likable hosts and a greater knowledge when it comes to video games. Podcasts less obsessed with retro gaming, who are more on board with modern AAA titles. This is the final chance for VGMP to win Mortal Kombat.
It's either that opening or I was going to do one where I deliberately miscalled it Mortal Wombat, and yes. You were going to have to correct me, and I was going to act like I'd seen a completely different film that was like a nature documentary. It was some wombats fighting each other.
David Attenborough
as Shang Tsung.
And now the wombat has committed the fatality.
Destiny awaits us, this stuff plays in front of me. Wasted all these stars and various celebrities. Adaption's life before us now, at least one must be, cause somehow we look for triumph, we can't fast forward. Searching for the good and deep, not lying so deep within. Trusting only instincts and sometimes plan to send. Forget it, jump a bitch again, how many goddamn Pokemon? This search is weary, they just keep coming. Uber Ball's full catalog is never ending. But reviewers must be strong and always willing to stay up and tolerate. Try for the BGMP. Cause they have got no vision. Filmmakers, bad decisions. Storylines blessing with scripts so bad they've been them. Rory's mission for films of vindication. Jamie's dead and his mind has just been leaking.
Hello, everybody. I am Jamie Evans, joined as always by Rory Jocelyn, and you are listening to a brand new season of VGMP, the Video Game Movie Podcast. This is our 6th season overall, 2nd on the Impala Films Network, so really 2nd season, because nothing that came before matters, god damn it. Today, we are talking about the 2021 movie Mortal Kombat. So as you can probably imagine, Mortal Kombat is a reboot of the 1995 Paul W.S. Anderson movie that we already covered. Check out previous episodes for that. And its terrible sequel. The film revolves around an original character named... You're going to have to remind me. Cole.
Yes.
The film revolves around an original character to the film named Cole.
Cole Young.
Who is dragged into the world of the Mortal Kombat tournament, although, spoiler alert, there is no actual Mortal Kombat tournament in this movie.
No.
Let's just get that out of the way right now.
Yeah, it is one of the biggest problems I have with this film is, as you say, there is no tournament. Instead, this is the story about trying to prevent there being a 10th tournament by the people that would benefit from it most.
Yeah, it's a bit of an ill-conceived plot.
Yes, very much so.
Especially considering that, at least where the film starts, it's not even as if Outworld are at the disadvantage. It's not like Earthrealm's got a fucking amazing AAA team, you know. No. They're all fucking Raiden-level powers. They're mostly morons who don't know what Mortal Kombat is until the film starts.
Yeah, so something that's kind of weird with this version of Mortal Kombat that's not in any other previous version is that you are not... You don't train necessarily... Well, you do, but you to get to Mortal Kombat, you don't just train to become the greatest warrior. What happens instead is you are born with a birthmark of the Mortal Kombat symbol, and that grants you access. No matter how good you are now one of the chosen to fight. Which means that essentially someone like you or me, Jamie, could be born with the Mortal Kombat birthmark, and it'd be like, right, Jamie, it's time for you to fight in the Mortal Kombat tournament. I'm just a fat dude who reviews movies. Like, what am I supposed to do?
I'm not going to lie, I don't like it. It's one of the biggest missteps in the film.
100%.
I'm not a fan. I think we've spoken about this before, but I'm not a fan of narratives where someone is born into greatness.
No.
Because that's bollocks. But it doesn't happen in real life.
But it also kind of undoes itself during the film as well, because it's like, okay, now you have to be born into greatness with this symbol. And then it turns out, if you kill someone with the symbol, sometimes, but not all the time, the symbol can transfer onto you, and then you become the chosen one.
Oh, I thought it was all the time.
It wasn't all the time, because there's a couple of points where they kill people with the symbol and no one takes it on.
Because they already had the symbol.
Maybe.
Wasn't it?
But then
I can't think of any time someone without a symbol kills someone who has a symbol.
I think it happens once and it doesn't happen and it doesn't transfer, but I can't remember when. But you are right.
Have one at the start?
Kano had one straight from the beginning. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He has one straight away.
Because when Sonya kills Kano, she takes his, doesn't she?
Yes.
And that's what you should have... If you're going to do this angle of you have to be born into Mortal Kombat,
yeah,
that's the storyline you focus on,
yeah,
is the woman who isn't destined to be in it, who earns her way into it,
yeah,
by actively being better than someone who was supposedly born into, yeah, it.
And also, why did someone who was born into it in Kano turn out to be such a disgusting, vile, evil schlub instead of the heroic, like, because essentially that means Kano and Liu Kang start at the same place when they're born. They're born with the mark. Oh no, I think Kano says he gets it for when he murdered, yeah, someone else before.
Yeah, he did. He murdered someone and got
it. But then the more interesting story would be he was born with it. Liu Kang obviously is all over, you know, allied good, and Kano is allied bad, but they both got the mark. So, and as well, actually, Bi-Han should have had one, because Bi-Han, who was Sub-Zero, he's from Earthrealm. But this kind of loses its way. It kind of just gets thrown in at the beginning as a reason, and then it doesn't really matter anymore.
Mm.
Also, here's the other side of it. If you're born with this mark, Raiden should know who you are, because he seems to be able to just teleport and grab people as he knows where things are for plot convenience. So via plot convenience, he should have been able to go, oh, right, I know where everyone is who has this mark, who is destined to be a Mortal Kombat warrior. Why is it with Jax, because Sonya doesn't have the mark, so for Jax, Kano, and Cole Young, it stated he does have it from birth, why has Raiden never approached them before, like a week before the tournament?
Yeah, well, especially because Raiden clearly knows Cole's family, because, yeah, we see in the beginning, so Cole is a descendant of Scorpion.
Yes.
And we see Raiden is the one who rescues Scorpion's only surviving child.
Yeah.
And takes them to Earthrealm.
Yeah, so he knows that Cole Young is born with a symbol. He knows he is a descendant, direct descendant of one of the previous Mortal Kombat tournament survivors, and that he is destined for greatness with this birthmark. Never goes back to him until it's like, by the way, the tournament's in a week. Oh, you're not really up to scratch. Well, no, yeah, shit, mate. You've had like 23 years to get back to this guy. Like, what the hell?
The plot is a little bit of a mess.
Yes. However, plot as it is, I think this film starts off very strong. The Sub-Zero versus Scorpion part at the beginning, set in sort of...
feudal Japan type thing looking.
Yeah, now I think it's set in the 1800s, which would still just been at the tail end of feudal Japan, to be fair. And it sets up one inconsistency. I understand Scorpion coming back because he's a Netherrealm, like, he's a Netherrealm spectre, because he dies at the intro, famously, yep, and then comes back as reviving from hell. But Sub-Zero, that means Sub-Zero's been around for like 150 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's never explained why he doesn't age.
I mean, the assumption is that Shang Tsung's done something, isn't it?
Maybe.
Because he's got him paired up with Shang Tsung.
Yeah, that's possible. But it's never outright stated.
No, I don't remember. Was there maybe a throwaway line where Shang Tsung says something about, I've granted you eternal youth in exchange for your loyalty or something like that?
Possible.
I can't remember. I'm not saying that definitely happened. It might be something I've added in my head.
It's just trying to find some way to make this script work a little bit better. But that opening sequence, the thing I do love, at least for the first time in one of these big films, the kunai that Scorpion uses is used properly.
Yeah.
It's a farming implement that he then converts into a weapon that becomes the classic Scorpion. Whereas in the original Paul Anderson one, it was like a living CGI snake thing that emerges from his hand. And again, Scorpion uses it before he dies because it is a real weapon. I did like that. And I do like how dark Sub-Zero is in this. He really feels like an unstoppable force. I think that's brilliant. And some of the ways he does it, like he manages to make someone bleed, he freezes their blood midair and uses it as a dagger.
Yeah.
Things like that are really cool ways of using Sub-Zero. The problem is, anyone who knows Mortal Kombat knows that Sub-Zero is just another fighter. He's not like, he's not Shao Kahn, he's not the big boss. He's kind of the most powerful person in the entire movie. Raiden, the Thunder God, does basically piss all throughout the entire film. Shang Tsung does literally nothing throughout this film.
Yeah.
He sucks out someone's soul in a very CGI rendered way, but he doesn't even fight the guy first.
Yeah.
So it's just like, so Shang Tsung literally just walks around going, oh, I am the greatest, most defeated, you can never defeat me, I'm the strongest warrior ever. You gonna do any fighting, mate? No. And then right at the end, when it's just down to him, like, right, we're down to the final guy, take him out. He's just like, I'm going to run away now, and he fucks off to Earthrealm. In fact, he doesn't go. Raiden sends him, goes, he talks too much.
Yeah.
Bathos, where it's not needed. So you now completely undercut the balls of your villain. And I'm just like, well, what's the point? He's meant to be the final villain of Mortal Kombat.
I mean, to be fair, it's just me.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I've never thought Shang Tsung was a good villain anyway.
Oh, in the original, he's great.
I always think of Shao Kahn as the main villain of Mortal Kombat.
Yes, but to be fair,
he's the actual intimidating looking dude with his big skull. No, I'm not talking the Brian Funkin' thingy version.
It's glorious!
I'm talking about from the Mortal Kombat cartoon I used to watch, you know. He's the big dude with the skull mask and, you know.
He is seen briefly in this, I think. Shao Kahn.
You see a statue of him, don't
you? That's it, I think, yeah. But yeah, he is more intimidating. He was the villain from Mortal Kombat 2 onwards. He's mentioned, I think, in the backstory of Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah, because Shang Tsung is working for him, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's working for Shao Kahn, but you never see Shao Kahn.
Yeah.
They
basically pulled a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, where you spend all of season one thinking Rita's the main villain, and then it turns out she works for Lord Zedd.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, with the original game, that's because the original game was, more so than the rest of Mortal Kombat, a lot more based on actual mythology. Mm. So all of the characters that are created from that first set are based on mythology of some kind. The most recent one being Johnny Cage, which was meant to actually be Jean-Claude Van Damme. That's Picard. Jean-Claude Van Damme was meant to be
playing
movie.
That character.
Yes.
But I want Patrick Stewart in this film fighting. Patrick Stewart, as he is now, like 90 years old, hobbling around being like, make it so.
Make him Shang Tsung.
No. I want him fucking doing backflips and Hadoukens. And
you want him? They don't do Hadoukens in this.
Oh, one of them does a fucking Hadouken. He don't say Hadouken, but it's a Hadouken.
It's called a fireball.
It's a fucking Hadouken, and you know it.
He throws fire. Though, okay.
That was Liu Kang, wasn't it?
It was Liu Kang. Liu Kang is the man of fire. But yeah, Liu Kang was based very much on Bruce Lee. Oh. You had Johnny Cage, who was based on Jean-Claude Van Damme from... Oh, trying to remember what the film was. It was a boxing one, though. It was a kickboxing film.
Oh, it's just called Kickboxer, isn't it?
It might be. It's where he's wearing the black shorts with the red sash, which is why Johnny Cage wears exactly that outfit in the first game, and then they change it in the second game onwards. Kano is a half-black, half-Japanese man with a cybernetic eye based somewhat on the Terminator, maybe even based a little bit on the original idea where it was meant to be... what's his name? The guy who murdered his wife and got away with it.
O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. So it might be even based on that concept of the Terminator. You've got Sub-Zero, who was created as sort of the idea of necromancy, and in this case, control of ice rather than of death. Cryomancy, that's the word I'm looking for, not necromancy. So based on the old cryomancer's idea in ancient China. So all of these characters, Sonya's just kind of a modern American military because it's like, well, we've got to have American military in here somewhere. And originally that was meant to be Jax. In the original game.
Yeah.
But they realized they had no women on the roster, so they converted Jax out for Sonya. And then in the second game, Sonya and Kano are captured, so Jax becomes a playable character instead, which suggests that Jax is on the island. So there's all of these different characters that are... Oh, and Raiden, of course, based on the... We've spoken about this before.
Yeah.
The Japanese god of thunder. All of them were based on real stuff. Goro, the half-dragon, half-prince with four arms, is actually based in some... That's probably the least mythological one, but I do believe it has some grounding. Shang Tsung is just old, wise kung fu master. And then Reptile was added in last minute, so it doesn't really count in that sense.
It's Godzilla.
Well, it's not really. In the original game, it's just a green ninja. So doesn't really go with the, it was just another recolor. It was because he was also in the original game, he didn't have any acid moves or anything. He was literally just a green ninja with Scorpion and Sub-Zero's moves and twice the speed.
Right.
So it was a really fucking hard fight to beat.
Yeah.
Because he could harpoon you, freeze you, and he was twice as fast as you. There's a huge difference between the first game and the rest of the series.
Right.
Because the first game is very much set in mythology. This film doesn't acknowledge the mythology very much, but this intro it does. Because because a lot of people thought that because Scorpion's from hell, he's the villain.
Yeah.
So a lot of the depictions of Scorpion in the early stuff is how villainous he is.
I always thought Sub-Zero was the more interesting character because he's just cooler.
Man, now look at you with the puns.
I actually didn't mean for that to be a pun and then realised it was. But he is. He's just cooler. He looks cooler. He's got powers. See, ice powers are cool.
Ice powers are cool. I am a big lover of Scorpion, though. And also, who's your favourite Sub-Zero?
Shut up. Fuck off.
Which Sub-Zero do you like?
I don't know. You know that I don't know.
Are you a Bihan man or are you a Kuai Liang?
I don't know. He's a blue ninja who throws ice. That's all I know.
But Kuai Liang has the scar down his face. And is a good guy, whereas Bihan hasn't got the scar down his face. He's a bad guy, but he dies early on and becomes Deep Cyborg.
I think the one in the cartoon show was the one with the scar down his face.
Yeah, so that's Kuai Liang.
I think. I don't know. I don't care enough about this franchise.
Yes, you do. It's the greatest franchise gaming ever created.
It's not, though, is it? So let's talk about the villain problem this film has.
Yes.
Since you've bought Quang Chi. Kuai Chi.
No, not Quan Chi.
Shang Tsung.
Quan Chi's amulet is in this, though.
Oh, there is a Quan Chi.
There is a Quan Chi. Right. His amulet is in this. Kano tries to nick it. Oh.
Shang Tsung is what I was trying to
say. Shang Tsung is the man you mean, yeah.
Because Shang Tsung's not the only villain that's got a problem in this movie.
No.
This movie has a real problem with it spends plenty of time on its heroes and very little time on its villains to the point where there really is... Other than maybe Shang Tsung and Kano, obviously, because he does a flip.
But technically, he's a good guy at the beginning, isn't
he?
Yeah.
All the other villains essentially have maybe one line of setup, and then it's
Sub-Zero.
Just boom. Yeah, other than Sub-Zero and Shang Tsung, everyone else, like Katana...
Not Katana,
Melina. What's the vampire lady?
Nitara, Raiko, Cabal.
Yeah. None of these have any real setup beyond like one or two lines of dialogue. And it's just, oh, here they are. The problem with that is they never, when it comes time to actually fight them, they don't feel like threats. They feel like cannon fodder.
Well, Natara's eliminated within 5 seconds of her first fight.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even an actual fight. She doesn't get a single hit on Kung Lao. Yeah. She flies at him, he throws her into his hat, and she gets sword in half.
Which was pretty gnarly, to be fair.
Yeah, that's based on the games, and it's brilliant.
I do wish there'd been more of a fight, but at the same time, I will praise this film for actually, unlike the Paul Anderson one, actually using the term flawless victory correctly.
Yes, we did know that a lot of Mortal Kombat, they love using flawless victory. It's one of the cool phrases, but they use it as a phrase where it doesn't apply.
Yeah, like someone will get damaged heavily and then Shang Tsung or fucking Kariyuki Tagawa will still go flawless victory. Are you like, well, it wasn't. But this is, like you said, Natara doesn't hit a single hit on Kung Pao Chicken. And he, what was it? Kung Lao?
Kung Lao.
Kung Lao.
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep wanting to say Kung Pao, which might be slightly racist of me.
It's just because you like chicken. It's fine.
I've never had Kung Pao chicken.
Have you not?
No. I do like chicken, though.
Oh, okay.
I like sweet and sour chicken. When I have a Chinese, I like to have sweet and sour chicken.
Is that where you get one really nice chicken and one really nasty chicken?
Oh. I do like Chinese chicken curry as well. Their version of curry is really nice.
Yeah, also, it curries favour when you talk to other people. Jamie, don't leave. Jamie. It was a chicken joke. Oh. I don't eat chicken, so I can't add anything but puns. I can't say my views on chicken. I haven't eaten chicken since I was 4. I'll talk a bit about the villains then, because they're kind of meaningless. While we wait for Jamie to see if he'll forgive me. Have you forgiven me?
On this show, we have a high production budget, fans. We do our own sound effects. Rory, this is what I think of your puns. That's an actual toilet flush, Rory. That ain't a stock sound effect. I literally just went and did a piss in that toilet. Didn't even need one. Just did it so I could do that joke.
Well, that's taking the piss.
No, it's leaving the piss.
Oh, yeah, good point. So, yeah, these villains, the problem is essentially these villains are just fodder. They're treated just as fodder. Now, part of that is I think they were trying to get rid of characters that people don't care about. So no one likes Natara. No one gives a fuck about Natara.
Don't Megan Fox play Natara in, like, the new...
So that might be... Bear in mind, this was made before the new game.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat 1, as it's called, frustratingly.
Yeah.
Even though it's the 12th game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it when they do that. Mortal Kombat 1, I believe it is Megan Fox's Natara. They may have changed people's attitudes. Because
should have done that in this film.
Yeah, 100%. But you know what? Mel Johnson isn't a bad choice. The problem is the type of character that character is needs some setup because it's a vampire. It's just a vampire. For in the Mortal Kombat universe, vampires have their own realm that they come from. So there's a realm of vampires that Natara is from. The problem is that we never see that realm. There's no setup for her. So she's just a vampire and she's shot far too brightly. A character like that works better in the dark, which I think would probably stem from they were going to use her character in the more horror focused version of it.
They don't nearly use darkness enough in this film.
No, it's all over bright.
It's got that modern film problem. The fun thing is this is going to surprise people because it sounds like we're really down on the film. I didn't hate this.
No.
But it's also not good.
No. It's an enjoyable crap film, basically.
It's better than the original. I preferred that. I will watch this again at some point. I'm never watching that Paul Anderson one again.
Oh. See, I still kind of think the Paul Anderson one's better.
Right.
I think, apart from the intro, most of the fights are better. Even then, the fights weren't great in the original, but at least it's kind of its time, and it looks better. It looks way more colourful than this.
That's not my recollection.
Oh, we'll have to watch both again.
No.
So, yeah, Natara is given no time. Because the fans hated Natara, I think they just wanted to waste her. Raiko is in this, who looks like Shao Kahn.
Is he the big sledgehammer guy?
He is. He's got no backstory either on this.
He's played by ex-WWE superstar Nathan Jones.
He is indeed. He is wasted as well. They just kind of get rid of him. Now, the point of Raiko in the original games from 4, he started in Mortal Kombat 4, was that he is Shao Kahn's top general. But Raiko has plans to usurp Shao Kahn, which could be a cool story in and of itself, not within this movie, because it would have no place, but within maybe a second one. So it seems odd that you've wasted him here, where he's got no point. But to be fair, the fans have always hated Raiko. So again, it's like, well, we could get rid of Raiko and no one would give a shit. Then you've got the other two, which I think are a bit more egregious. You've got Cabal, played by Daniel Nelson, which isn't a bad interpretation, but it makes no sense to the narrative because he's wholly from Earthrealm. And yet he's fighting with Shang Tsung and he's traveling through and he doesn't have a birthmark of his own, but he hates Kano, so that's enough to somehow... How he would have initially come in contact with Shang Tsung to get hired by him, I don't know. And the other thing as well is where he states he doesn't have the birthmark, it states you need one in order to get the special powers. But Cabal has special powers.
Yeah, he's super speed, isn't he?
Yeah, which is accurate to the games. But again, it's like, well, if you're establishing you need the mark to get the powers, why does he have them? He's just a human who was burnt heavily by Kano and he's now having to wear a suit. And again, there was a lot more depth you could have done with that character, which was left by the wayside. But by far the worst one for the villains is Melina. You see, I don't know why Melina's in this film.
Because she's quite a major character, isn't she?
Yeah.
And she's literally just cannon fodder in this movie.
Yeah, she's wasted. Completely wasted. Sissy Stringer doesn't do a bad job with her, with what she's given, but what she's given is nothing. Anyone who knows Mortal Kombat knows that Melina and Katana, they're a double act. It'd be like putting Scorpion in a film, but with Sub-Zero. No Sub-Zero. So, as they were growing up, Melina is raised as Katana's twin sister, but she's actually invented by Shang Tsung's blood magic, crossed with Tarkatan blood. So Shang Tsung raises them both as daughters, but that leads to a problem with Melina, where the Tarkatan face, like the smile with all the extra teeth, starts splitting her skin. Melina is pure evil because of the blood magic, whereas Katana fights for evil first and then realizes that Shang Tsung usurped the King Gerard on the throne and has basically been pretending to be her real dad the whole time. So that's the story of those two characters. You work them in sequence. You have another character, Jade, who is Kitana's best friend, who is also working for Shao Kahn. But that's the story for the sequel, when you're in Outworld, which is what they're doing with the upcoming sequel.
Yeah.
So it seems really stupid to waste Melina here, where she's got no narrative relevance.
That's an odd decision, because then in the next film, that means they not only have to introduce Johnny Cage, but then also get him to Outworld.
So, yeah, he's, and if he is meant to be chosen, A, why was he not chased and murdered by a Sub-Zero? And B, if he wasn't chosen, why are they sending him to Outworld now? Unless he gets the mark somehow, I'm guessing is going to be the way to do it.
Didn't Kung Pao die?
Kung Lao, yeah.
Kung Lao.
Yeah.
Maybe he in... Oh, no, because it passes to whoever kills you. Who kills Kung Lao? Shang Tsung, he sucks his soul out.
Yes. So, and again, that's another flawless victory, because he doesn't even fight him. Mm. He just, like, uses magic to make him come over to him and then strangles him to death and sucks his soul. There's a lot of problems with this. Kung Lao isn't given a lot of time, but you know what? He's shown as an arrogant prick. I don't mind that. And actually, it leads to a really good scene between him and the MVP of this film, which is Josh Lawson as Kano. Josh Lawson as Kano is the best thing in this film.
I've seen Josh Lawson before. He was in a show, House of Lies, playing a completely opposite character.
Yeah.
Like, he's like the fucking nerd in the group who's like all obsessed with spreadsheets and numbers and figures, and he's always worrying about the antics the group are getting up to.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting watching him as Kano. I remember watching it and I was like, he's got a beard in this, which he doesn't have in House of Lies. Mm. And I was watching it going, is that Doug Guggenheim from House of Lies? And it is Doug Guggenheim.
Nice. I think he's brilliant. And I like the... He's the funniest character, yeah. Purposely so, to be fair. And when he has arguments with all the others when they're training to compete for the Mortal Kombat tournament, like, when he's talking about getting better, like, oh, am I going to get special powers? Like, he sees that Liu Kang's got fire and he sees that Kung Lao has the hat. And he's like, what am I going to get? I hope I get fireballs. Fireballs will be great. Not fucking frisbee hat. Sorry, no offense, mate. And all this sort of stuff. It's like constantly calling out the bullshit of the Mortal Kombat universe, but in a way that fits with the character.
Is he canonically Australian, or is that just for this film? Because isn't he British in the Paul Anderson one?
So that's an interesting story. So
it's really not. You don't need to tell it.
Just briefly then. Kano was originally a black African-American Japanese cross. In the original games, when they did the Paul Anderson film, they wanted a British guy, so they were doing all these auditions, and the guy who got the role auditioned with an Australian accent because he thought it was meant to be Australian. They went, that's a brilliant British accent, and hired him. So he's British, but then he spends the whole time trying to do an Australian accent throughout the film because he thinks that's the accent they want, because the Americans couldn't tell the difference. Between a British and an American, British and a Australian accent.
Do you know what's even funnier about that story?
He still sounds British in the film.
No, no. You're on about the original Paul Anderson film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Paul Anderson is British.
Oh, God.
Paul Anderson's from Newcastle.
To be fair, he might not be the casting couch guy.
Casting director.
Oh, yeah.
Casting couch is a whole different thing. That's Harvey Weinstein thing.
Is there
thing.
Not normally couches in casting directors' lounges? Oh, have they gotten rid of them because of Harvey Weinstein?
Mm.
Shame. Where else am I supposed to strip?
Yeah, that is an odd story, because Paul W.S. Anderson is British.
Yeah.
So you'd think he'd have got on set and been like, the fuck are you doing, mate?
Yeah. But either way, that's...
Sorry, it would have been, why I, mate? What are you doing? That's not a Geordie accent either, is it?
I don't know where you are in the world, to be honest.
They say why I, man, I know that.
Okay, fair play.
Why I, man?
So essentially, after that point, the original creators loved that interpretation. So in all the games following, Kano is played as an Australian.
Well, that's just a poor mistake on their part, isn't it? To look at anything from the 1995 film and go, yeah, let's take this and put it in the games.
Well, to be fair, it plays well in the games, and it's played well here as well, because that's now become the canon for that character.
Do they explain in the game why he suddenly switches race?
No, no, no. They don't.
Of course.
Why would they even bother? Yeah, no, so from Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3, he's black Japanese. And then in Mortal Kombat 4 onwards, he's a white Australian.
Cool.
I think Josh Lawson does a brilliant job. And actually, I'm going to give a shout out to Jessica McNamee as well, who plays Sonya. I think she does a brilliant job with what she's given. I think the problem she has is she's not given enough.
Yeah, she went bad.
I think she could have done a lot more with the role if they'd actually focused on more on the intensity of... you know, you're not good enough, love, because you don't have this mark. Yeah. And her earning her way in. And actually, I think she should have been able to earn her way in without getting the mark. Because I think the idea of transferring the mark is only there to support her storyline. But it's not needed. It's not needed. If someone's a good enough fighter, good enough to defeat someone with the mark, that should be proof that actually, rather than the person with the mark, we should bring in the one without. Because they're more likely to be able to defend Earthrealm. Yeah. So I really like that. And also Hiroyuki Sanada as Scorpion and Joe Taslim as Bi-Han or Sub-Zero. I think they do a great job.
Yeah, they do a fine job. One of the problems with this film is the Scorpion stuff feels ancillary.
Yes.
They're in the opening. Then he's not really in the rest of the film apart from a few like fucking psychic flashes of him burning in hell.
Mm.
And then he just kind of resurrects at the end. Yeah. And nothing really triggers that resurrection beyond if you're a fan of the game, you know, oh, his mortal enemy is Sub-Zero. He comes back to fight him.
Yeah.
But nothing really happens in the film.
Yeah.
To say what causes him to come back at this precise moment,
yeah,
other than the plot needs him to come back to save Cole's life.
See you after the break. VGMP.
So my suggestion of what they did wrong in this film, from my perspective, obviously this is just an opinion, is that they tried to make it too much like a Marvel movie. Let's stick in loads of characters and try and make this big, you know, cinematic universe of Mortal Kombat characters all fighting. This needed to be more intimate to establish the universe, and you go big on the second one. And part of the thing that would have helped with the Scorpion plot that you're talking about would have been, with a smaller cast, you focus on Bi-Han or Sub-Zero chasing down and trying to kill the Earthrealm fighters who are training for Mortal Kombat before the tournament. He's the only thing that Shang Tsung has sent to break the tournament. Because where Shang Tsung is coming through with multiple people, obviously Raiden's going to go, mate, you're breaking the rules, what are you doing? Whereas if Shang Tsung can just play that off and go, why would I send anyone to try and kill your fighters? If we win this tournament, we win. I've got no reason to do it.
Sub-Zero's acting on his own grudge.
Yeah.
He's a rogue agent.
Yeah, yeah. He's hired Sub-Zero to do it, but it's like he refuses to acknowledge it officially. So that way, Raiden's just like, I don't know where this guy's coming from. You now make this a bit more like Terminator, I suppose, in that sense, but it's not too dissimilar from what's in the film, where Sub-Zero is this unstoppable force hunting them. And then you introduce this extra element where the hunter is also the hunted. And basically, there are points where Sub-Zero is near enough going to kill some of them, and then Scorpion comes along, and you get this point where Scorpion is constantly chasing relentlessly this guy. And so Sub-Zero is hunting you, but Scorpion is hunting him as a repeatable force. Then when you get to this point at the end, it doesn't feel out of place for Scorpion to just magically appear.
Yeah.
Because you're like, right, he's found him again. I know where this was inevitable. You know, you're running towards an inevitable conclusion rather than Deus Ex Machina-ing a Scorpion into your scene. It also kind of feels a bit odd because I suppose some of the suggestion in this film is that Scorpion appears because Sub-Zero is about to kill his bloodline. Because Sub-Zero tried, doesn't know that Cole Young is Scorpion's son. I think he finds it out at this point, or is told by Shang Tsung, and he's kidnapped Cole Young's family, but has frozen them in ice but not killed them this time, which is very kind of him because he killed Scorpion's family by freezing them without second hesitation. But yeah, so he leaves the family alive, just frozen in ice, and starts trying to kill Cole Young. So Scorpion appears to save his son, and as such, also his grandson. But again, as you say, it feels like a Deus Ex Machina. It just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. It feels like it's there because you have to have Scorpion v Sub-Zero in a Mortal Kombat movie.
And you do. But what you also need to do is you need to set it up. One of the other big problems with this film, as I say, like I've talked about, you know, why Melina is the wrong choice for this film, because her storyline doesn't allow for her to be important in this narrative, but she has an important narrative with someone else. They needed to couple them. The reason Sonya and Kano work is that they are a duo. They are a duo that hates each other. And Sub-Zero and Scorpion work because they are a duo that hate each other. These are duos that you can pair off, and it feels significant when they fight. I'm sorry, Jax versus Ryko isn't significant. It never feels significant. Liu Kang versus Cabal isn't significant narratively at all, not at all significant. Melina versus...
Well, the weird thing is, because his natural archenemy is Kano.
Yeah.
So Kano swaps to being on his side.
Yeah.
Which feels really like it lets the steam out sort of type thing.
It would have made more sense for Cabal to get wasted by Kano, and then Sonya decides she needs to get in on it in some way, or he then turn. You know, it's like, well, if I've killed Cabal, if he was good enough for you and I'm better than him, why don't you just have me on your team? And then
I was gonna
switch
say,
allegiance.
Yeah, have Kano take Cabal's place.
Yeah.
So Shang Tsung's like, oh, I've already got a full roster. I can't take anyone else.
Yeah.
Unless you were to happen to kill one of them.
Yeah. And he goes for Cabal. I've killed you before, mate. I'll kill you again.
It's a bit like fucking the bit in The Dark Knight where the Joker breaks the stick in half and he's like, we are going to have tryouts.
Yeah. 100%. And that's what you need to do. You need to introduce that element of stuff.
Shang Tsung's from The Dark Knight, by the way.
Yeah, no, yeah. He was the nerdy Chinese business guy, the banker, who ends up flying to China with the mafia's money without telling them. And then Batman has to skyhook in to China and then grab him and take him out.
He wasn't as bad in this as you'd led me to believe, to be fair. The character's written poorly is the problem.
Yeah, I think that's what I'd misunderstood when I first watched it. I was just like, why is Shang Tsung shit? Why is the actor doing a bad job?
I was expecting him to be a real... To be honest, he doesn't look as weedy as I was expecting him to look. I do suspect the costume's doing a lot of the heavy lifting for him.
Yeah.
Because it's got big, broad shoulder pads on it, hasn't it?
And, yeah.
I quite like this look for Shang Tsung. It looks a lot more traditional. It looks like a sort of Chinese emperor, which I understand he's not supposed to be an emperor, which I can understand why as a Mortal Kombat fan that would be a bit of a... Well, no, because he's meant to be serving under Shao Kahn. But as a visual, I quite liked this imagery.
Yeah. Raiden, as I say, is completely useless and ineffectual this entire movie. A complete waste of a character. However, the actor himself is not doing a bad job. It does suffer from... Even though he is Japanese, he does have kind of a... His voice comes across like almost like a Japanese stereotype, which is a bit worrying because it means like we're watching it sitting there going, oh, we can't quote any of this guy. Because
well, you can, you just can't do it as an impression.
That's true. But it would sound like you're being racist, but it's actually not too far off.
I thought the effect on his eyes was a bit shit.
It was, yeah. But it's not actually the actor's fault. And it is nice to see Raiden actually played by a Japanese person rather than a white man.
Yeah, true. Christopher Lambert.
Yeah, but he's always played as a white
Ramar,
man.
Yeah.
But he's also in the games. He's never Asian in the games.
Do you remember my Mandela effect with him?
What, with James Ramar?
No, with Raiden.
Right.
Until we watched Mortal Kombat, and I remember talking about this on the episode, I was convinced, I would have bet money that Patrick Stewart played Raiden.
Oh, jeez.
Honestly, I have always had in my memory that Patrick Stewart played Raiden in Mortal Kombat, and then
he's never been in Mortal Kombat.
No.
No.
But for some reason, it was just a Mandela effect memory that I had.
Wow.
Was, yeah, just like... Honestly, as clearly as I can remember him as Professor X, I could also remember him as Raiden.
He's not Professor X, that's James McAvoy.
Do you want to co-host on this show?
Yeah,
I do.
I like it.
Because I'm honestly going to walk.
Don't walk.
I just want to say about the Scorpion Sub-Zero fight. It is very good. But
the final one or the first one?
Well, the final one. And kind of the first one, 2 points. Point number one, the frozen in ice effects never look quite right for some reason.
They always look a little plastic, like
they're
in plastic wrap, yeah.
Yeah, but the second thing is the problem with having the Sub-Zero Scorpion fight at the end is you've robbed Cole of his ending to his journey.
But Cole doesn't exist in the games, that's why.
I know, but just taking this as the film.
Yeah, sure.
Just the film. If you're not going to give him the end to his story, why have you created an original character to begin with? Why aren't we just following Liu Kang or Johnny Cage or anyone? So, to be fair, I think Sonya would have been the better choice.
Yeah, 100%.
Given modern audiences, they'd have been like, oh, it's woke.
Not if you're doing it correctly, I don't think. Because she, like, yes, she, okay, there are people that are kicking off because they're female lead characters. But I think most people who would have watched this anyway would have been fans of the game and would know that Sonya is a main character.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have been a surprise. I wouldn't sit there and go, but Sonya was never even in the games, you know. Yeah, she was. She was right from the off.
Sonya wins.
Also, this isn't a fault of Louis Tan, who plays him. He does a brilliant job. But Cole Young seems superfluous in his own narrative. Because as you say, like, Raiden saves his life as a baby, then just forgets about him until a week before the tournament. And even he doesn't find him, it's flipping Sonya and Jax that find him. And on top of that, his main special power, everyone gets these special powers. Sonya eventually gets the arm bracelet, shoots, she doesn't do the kiss of death, because I think that would have been a bit sexist nowadays. You've got Kano with the eye laser, Liu Kang with fireballs. But Cole
Jax
Young
gets his metal arms, which that weirded me out a bit.
That didn't make sense. We'll get to Jax in a second.
In the film, are they a Mortal Kombat superpower, or are they just...
They're both.
What they're called, prosthetics that he's been given.
They seem to be both, because at first when he loses his arms and they're given to him, they're weedy arms, aren't they? And they're just prosthetics. And then for some reason, when he gets his Mortal Kombat superpower... The superpower is upgrade the arms.
Oh, yeah, but I meant in the game.
In Mortal Kombat 2, he has his normal arms.
Yeah, and they get ripped off, don't they?
Yes, so famously, I think it's... Is it Kintaro is the main... Is the Goro-like character in that?
Kintaro.
My best friend. Basically, he gets his arms ripped off by Kintaro, and then in the third game gets metal arms as replacements.
But they are just prosthetics. They're not magic.
No. And it makes no sense as well. Like, if his... Again, like, this is where the logic on the whole, you know, birthmark gives you powers thing fails. Because if the birthmark for Jax was always going to unlock the power of metal arms, why did you have to rip his arms off at all? And also, like, or would it have given him a different power had his arms not been ripped off?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I'm
picking up what you're laying down.
It just seems a bit odd that it's like, oh, we'll upgrade your arms then. It's like, was I always getting upgraded arms? Like, or was I going to have eye laser? Like, what was my other choice? But yeah, Cole Young seems superfluous to his own narrative because things happen to him. He doesn't really drive the plot. He's found by Jax. He saves his family. He then travels to see Sonya, and then from that point on, he just follows Sonya and Kano.
Yeah.
And just does whatever he's told, until he gets to a point where he's like, no, I must protect my family. And he leaves, and then he ends up having to fight Goro. Way too soon in the movie. I'm sorry, you can't tell me that Cabal is a much more epic final battle than Goro. But yeah, he ends up having to save his family from Goro. And that's when he unlocks his superpower. Now, unlike everyone else, there is no pre-built-in superpower for Cole Young because he doesn't have an in-game equivalent. And I don't fully understand the one he gets.
It's an Aquaman suit.
Yeah, it basically gets a golden suit wrap around him where he can take epic damage. It still seems to hurt him, but it doesn't, like, injure him. And then can he use that power back on his nemesis, or is it just absorbing the impact?
Yeah, I think it just absorbs it. I thought where it was going to was he was going to like do a shockwave, kind of like Black Panther. To be fair, maybe that was the plan, and then they saw Black Panther and went, oh, fuck. I guess it just absorbs the damage now.
Yeah. But that seems...
It's a bit lame compared to everyone else's power.
Yeah, I can throw fireball. I mean...
How is spinny hat better than fucking golden wrap armor?
Spinny hat is a bit silly. But that's always
using to fucking cut a bitch in half.
Yeah, to be fair, frisbee at. We also see Reptile in this film. I don't know if it's Psygoth, which is the real name of the reptile from the games. It might just be another Zeteran, which is the realm that he's from. But we do see Reptile in this. He gets his heart ripped out by Kano, and he's like, fatality. You fucking beauty. Brilliant line. There seems to be no reason why characters are paired off. And I think that sucks a lot of the drama out. And I also don't know why Cole's here. Cole's here to be basically a neutral introduction to the Mortal Kombat formula, but it makes more sense for that to be Sonya.
You could have just done it with Sonya. You could have done it with Johnny Cage. You could have done it with loads of characters.
Now, before we move on, I'm going to have a look at the IMDb for Mortal Kombat 2. Mm. And it does say plot unknown at this time, so some of this stuff may not be accurate by the time the film comes out. But we do know that
this
Carl Urban...
This is
the
one where Carl Urban's in it, and he's playing Johnny Cage.
Yeah, now that is confirmed. Fair enough. Carl Urban is Johnny Cage, and that's an interesting choice. I'll be interested to see how that works. We've got Hiroyuki Sanada coming back as Hanzo Hisashi, or Scorpion. That makes sense, because he's an undead spectre.
But to be fair, I'm curious to see what excuse they're going to use to bring him back then, because Sub-Zero's dead.
Kuai Liang.
But Kuai Liang's a good guy.
Yeah, but that, so in Mortal Kombat 2, the original game, again, doesn't necessarily have to follow this logic, but in the original game, Scorpion comes back into Mortal Kombat 2's tournament fighting for Shao Kahn because he realizes Sub-Zero's back and he doesn't know how. So he's like, well, I've got to fucking kill this guy again then. So he enters the tournament to kill Sub-Zero, but he then sees Kai Liang, Sub-Zero, show mercy to, like, he doesn't commit a fatality. He's like, no, I've got no reason to kill someone. And he's like, that's not like Bi-Han at all. Bi-Han would have killed that motherfucker without a second thought. And then he realizes and learns that it's his, it's Bi-Han's younger brother, but he actually has some empathy and a heart.
So he's also immortal then.
Who?
Bi-Han's younger brother. If Bi-Han's from the 1800s.
That's not established in the games. So Kuai Liang, because he knows Kuai Liang's a good guy and he actually shows mercy, he's like, okay, I'm not going to punish him. In fact, I'll become his protector. And then he turns sides against Shao Kahn.
And then he fights Noob Saibot.
Yes. Well, so Noob Saibot does first appear in Mortal Kombat 2. He's not officially confirmed to be Bi-Han until Mortal Kombat Conquest? No, not Conquest. That's the TV show. Mortal Kombat Deception, I think.
Right.
It's much later that it's confirmed. It is also stated in Mortal Kombat Shaolin Monks, which was a spin-off Street of Rage style game. We've got Martin Ford confirmed as Shao Kahn.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that as a pick.
Why is that?
So physically, he definitely can play Shao Kahn. I don't know if you're familiar with Martin Ford, but he is a giant of a man.
Yeah,
he is about 6'8". And fucking shredded.
He looks fucking shredded.
He's not an actor.
Right, okay.
He's a bodybuilder / martial artist who gets acting roles based purely on his physicality.
Shao Kahn doesn't really need a lot of depth. He's never been a deep character, even in Mortal Kombat.
Right.
He's always just, you know, not quite. It was glorious.
Honestly, I'm not sure he can pull off this is glorious.
Yeah, we'll only be able to find out when we watch the movie. Tati Gabriel has been confirmed as Jade. She was in Uncharted.
Yeah,
she was,
she's cool. She's badass.
She's badass. And now I'm like, actually, that's a fucking really good pick. Damon Herriman has been chosen for Quan Chi, which is an odd choice.
He was a voice role in this one.
Yes, he was. I think he was Cabal.
Cabal, yes.
Yeah. Tadanobu Asano is returning as Raiden. Lewis Tan as Cole Young. Jessica McNamee as Sonya. Mechad Brooks as Jax. Josh Lawson is back as Kano. Joe Taslim
is he going to have his robot face this time?
Yeah, because
he doesn't get that in this, does he? He just gets the laser eye, not the metal face.
Yeah, and he gets stabbed through the eye, which assumedly kills him, but actually not necessarily. So it could be that he comes back with the half metal face, which would be kind of fine. Bi-Han is back in this. So Bi-Han is definitely dead, so I assume that he's coming back as Noob Saibot. Liu Kang is back, that's fine, he survives. Adeline Rudolph has been confirmed as Kitana, which would be interesting, but again, don't know how they're going to play her story without Melina.
Are they going to resurrect Melina, perhaps?
Or maybe they'll just swap out Melina with
Jade.
Yeah, maybe.
Is Melina listed in the credits at all?
I'll have a look. Chin Han is returning as Shang Tsung. Desmond Chiam is playing King Gerard. Now, King Gerard is a very minor role, but he's Kitana's real dad. And then you've got Anna Thun-Nugan as Sindel, which will be interesting. Don't know how they're going to play Sindel in this one. Baraka is going to be played by CJ Bloomfield. And then we've got Max Huang as Kung Lao again. And I'm like, but Kung Lao is dead. So unless it's a flashback, they'd have to revive him because his soul has been taken. Like, he's not... He literally is dead. Like, there's no...
Maybe they only get Shang Tsung in a Freddy Krueger Part 4 style.
Maybe.
All souls rip out of his body and tear him to pieces.
Or they could do a dark interpretation where it's like, he's now evil Kung Lao. Yeah, what's weird is there's an actress, a young child actress, playing young Kitana, but there's no mention of a young Melina.
Right.
Which suggests to me that Melina won't be represented. But, I mean, it could just be that they've not announced that casting yet. Oh, it's just so weird. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I don't see what the benefit is of doing the Kitana storyline without Melina.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, you do still have quite a bit there. You've got the King Gerard part being usurped by Shao Kahn with the support of his wife, Sindel, because it's King Gerard's wife, Sindel, who then marries Shao Kahn after he takes over. And Jade is her best friend. So you do have three support characters at least there. I'm also a bit surprised that Rain hasn't been suggested. Rain was the purple ninja, And Rain is also from the realm that Kitana is from. And he's a prince who feels wronged and fights for Shao Kahn because he thinks he should be the man in charge of
Edonia.
Edenia, that's it.
How did I know that?
I don't know. Kavania. Rain thinks he should be the ruler of Edenia underneath Shao Kahn because he was a prince, but he's also, I don't know if you could probably guess this, but you know why Rain is called Rain?
Because it rains when he was born. No. Because he's a fool.
So he was added in Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 as an extra character. He's a purple ninja.
Yeah.
So it's Purple Rain. And all of his moves were named after songs from Prince. And that's why he's a Prince of Edenia. It's a character made entirely of puns.
No wonder you like this franchise.
Yeah. I actually don't like Rain that much. Sometimes he's done okay, but he's a bit of a camp character, to be honest. Ermac's another one that I always thought was a bit underutilized. I've never really gotten into Ermac. He's the red ninja. He was suggested in the first game. It became a bit of a urban legend. You could unlock Ermac because on the menu underneath the reptile settings, there's one called Ermax, but it just meant Era Macros. People assumed that there was another hidden character called Ermac. So in the second game, you know, sometimes before a fight in the first game, Reptile would jump up and he'd make a quizzical statement about like how to find him. Some of the secret characters in Mortal Kombat 2 would do that. They jump on before a match and just go, you know, the pit is where you'll find me or something like that. There was one where someone said, Ermac who? And some people are like, oh, Ermac's in Mortal Kombat 2. He is not. And then they're like, oh, Ermac's in Mortal Kombat 3. He's got to be. And he's not. He's in Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. And he's got psychokinetic powers.
Sounds a bit shit.
Yeah, this is where they got to the point where they're like, well, blue and yellow ninja were popular. And then we add green ninja. And then you have yellow, blue, green ninja. Everyone loves yellow, blue, green ninja.
And purple.
So in the, yeah, and then in the third one, they add ketchup and mustard, renamed to Sector and Cyrax, as the robots. They also have Smoke in the second one, who is the gray ninja. And then they start doing a female version with Kitana in blue, Melina in purple, Jade in green. And then they do, it's because it was all just like, oh, well, we could just use the same sprites.
I feel like we should make a film called Mortal Kombat, Too Many Ninjas.
Oh, mate, the amount of ninjas is insane. You know, there's two chameleons.
Didn't know there was one chameleon.
Yeah, there's a chameleon with a C who's a male ninja who's mostly grey, but his suit changes colours like a chameleon. And then there's Chameleon with a K, who's the more popular one, because it's a recolor of Kitana. And similarly, she's gray, but her color changes like a chameleon's. And you're like, you were so imaginative, you made two characters called Chameleon, and they're both the same sprite swap shit. It's so stupid.
Man, fuck this franchise. So is there anything else to say about Mortal Kombat 2021?
No, I thought it was enjoyable. I do think it's a good time if you turn your brain off, but it does have a lot of bad writing and where the plot just falls apart on itself.
It's like we said, the central conceit of the plot doesn't work.
No.
Which is, why risk breaking all the rules when you're already winning?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense for Shang Tsung to be cheating.
Yeah, because he's won 9 in a row. He only needs to win one more. And assumedly, it's because he's killed all the best warriors in the previous 9 tournaments. And Raiden, being the sloppy workman that he is, has left it till a week before the tournament to start training everyone. Yeah. It's an easy victory. You've got a team of hardened winners.
Yeah.
You've got Sub-Zero, who's already kicking everyone's ass. You've got Goro. You've got flipping Melina. And you've got yourself, assumedly, even though you're not fighting in this film for some fucking reason. So you've got a team of hardened warriors, and that's just the ones that we know of that he's brought with him.
Yeah.
And you're like, so what was the benefit of coming in early to try and fuck up everything up? You're already winning. It's so stupid. I'm hoping that the second film is written better, and I'm very interested and intrigued by Carl Urban's Johnny Cage. But I also don't know where Cole Young will fit into the story now, because Cole Young's whole thing was that he's, you know, a fighter down on his luck who's essentially finds himself given a chance to fight for Earthrealm.
Yeah.
That's Johnny Cage's story.
Maybe they'll just kill Cole Young off right at the start and Johnny Cage will inherit his...
I mean, they do kill Johnny Cage off in Annihilation within like 5 seconds, don't they?
Yeah.
So maybe they'll just repeat that with Cole Young. But that would then also nullify the entire point of the first film, which was for Cole Young to find himself and protect his family.
I don't think anyone cares, though, do they? I don't think the internet has taken to him as a character.
No.
Particularly.
No. And to be fair, like by the time this film came out, there was already a Scorpion Sun character in the games called Takeshi Takada, who was based on Scorpion Sun in Mortal Kombat Conquest. But Mortal Kombat Conquest is shit.
Right.
So... no one really cared. I think this is an all right movie. Have you thought of there being any worse lines? I can't think of anything too bad as a line.
No.
As you say, the conceit of the film doesn't work, but that's not necessarily a quotable phrase or a quotably bad phrase. Okay, so would you recommend the film, Jamie?
Go on. I'm going to be nice. Gonna recommend this. It's not great. You really do have to turn your brain off, but it's shot competently. It's lit competently. The action scenes are okay. There's not nearly enough setup for the villains, but you can turn your brain off and you'll be entertained.
See, for me personally, this is a maybe, but I think I'm going to say yes as well, and I'll tell you why. Because my maybe would be, if you like Marvel movies, or you don't mind turning your brain off for a dumb bit of action fun, well, that's all Marvel movies, and Marvel movies are the biggest franchise ever going. So if I was to say that's as a maybe, that's basically going, only maybe if you're the biggest audience on the planet. So I can't really say that as a maybe, can I? So it's got to be a yes. It's not brilliant. The script is shit. But the action's well done, it's competently filmed, and it is a fun time. And you know what? Some of the acting's brilliant. Again, Josh Lawson, you're the man. Can't wait to see him again in the second one.
You the man.
You the man.
Cool.
All right, cool. Well, so it's a double yes, and no worse lines on this occasion.
Fantastic. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of VGMP, the Video Game Movie Podcast. It is a brand new season. We're going to be here with you all year, folks. That's our guarantee, which is locking us into a long, long old bit of work.
Only 5 years to go.
Did you know you can get episodes of VGMP a week early by joining the Impala Films Patreon page and subscribing to our Ultimate Impala tier, where you will also get access to our other shows, Second Take Cinema, our movie review show, The Lakes of the Moon, our cosmic horror audio drama, and Haunted, the audio drama, our action-adventure horror series. It's Doctor Who meets the X-Files, interspersing Monster of the Week narratives with long-form story arcs. It's about to start its third season, and touch wood, people are loving it. So get over here and subscribe. Until next time, bye bye.
Cyberpunk Studios.